Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Access Astrology. We are three astrologers, normally, though today we only have two, who love to share our love of astrology and our fascination with how that mixes in with the world at large and how the headlines tell us so much about the astrological events and but the astrological events tell us how we can best handle the events that are happening in the world around us. We find it such a fascinating map. And this is Heather Rowan Robbins. Tonight I'm speaking to you from Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I'm joined by...
Anne Ortley, and I'm here at my bright red desk on the Upper East Side in the middle of a rainstorm. And Mark's taking a night off because he has to teach bright and early in the morning. So he's sleeping, we think. At least that's what he said he was going to be doing. So we're assuming he's snuggled tight in his bed on this gray and rainy day in New York. So,
Well, it's sunshiny here after snowing off and on for the last week here in New Mexico. I'm heading back to Minneapolis for some more snow, but it's been the sunset here with the beautiful pinks and purples over the snow is just gorgeous. I've missed it. But this week has been so full of emotional extremes, great excitement, good energy, and great tragedy. That instability, which, you know, whenever I hear that level of instability, I think Uranus.
Yeah.
Last week, Uranus was stationary. It turned direct after many months retrograde. Whenever a planet turns direct, you know, the good news is it's moving forward. The bad news is all the stuff that people have been brooding on while the planet was retrograde begins to come out.
Yeah.
So in this case, Uranus was turning direct, and it was trining Mercury, and so it's great mental stimulation. And, you know, I've been working my buns off this week, and it's been great mental stimulation. We've been doing just about everything we can think of down here in New Mexico. Workshops and talks and great collaboration. So that's one energy realm of it. But it also makes the mind buzz, and the day of the shooting in Connecticut, the moon had just conjunct Pluto and was moving closer towards Mars. Charon was in the middle of all of that, and they were both aspecting Uranus, and Uranus was stationary. So the image of the first death was killing the mother, with that Moon-Pluto conjunction just as he shot his mother and the man in Connecticut, and then the pattern that happened from there. If we weren't all dealing with great emotional ups and downs ourselves, it wouldn't have resonated so much in the culture, but indeed it did. But what we see with this, because, you know, every month, every week, the moon is going to either conjunct or square or oppose Uranus or Pluto, and Uranus and Pluto, because they're both in that T-square for the next couple of years. But we don't have to act out every month. This month, Mars was involved. Uranus was stationary. And I'm seeing that from this event may trigger some good things. There's nothing good about the death of children. No one could ever say that. But we can use it to create good things. It is not itself a good thing. We may see a new approach to weaponry here in America, which the rest of the world can't believe that we have our approach to. We may see, I'm hearing family after family tell me stories that they are dropping their sadness. They're dropping their crap with each other and connecting to each other and just saying, you know, you are too important to me in a way that it's rather miraculous that they're getting over, letting go of some of their family patterns and really connecting this solstice season. And what have you seen this week?
Well, I think the, you know, certainly the energy of the murders. It also was at the end of the at the end of the eclipse season, and you know, we started with Sandy the storm, and we ended with Sandy Hook the school. And I think on both ends of the eclipse made us aware of the ephemeral nature of life, you know, life, you know, no guarantees. And then it also, because it's a finger of God in the heavens, it's a pointing device. It's a crossroads. Mm-hmm. It's where we say, okay, you know, like what really
which
is important
to me. Which finger of God is that?
Pardon?
Which finger of God?
There's a finger of God between Pluto and Saturn, who are in sextile to each other, and they're both pushing transformation, transformation, transformation. We've been working with them for a while, and they are both in conjunct to Jupiter, who is in Gemini, which is the sign of children. And it also is, they both are talking, you know, with Uranus in the mix. He's not far away. He's like four. They're eight. So they're talking. Uranus is talking to Pluto. So when he stopped, he kind of stimulated the finger of God. And the output of it was Mercury and Sag, little children, lots of children, or Jupiter and Gemini, you know, teachers and children. So we heard many stories about teachers stepping forward and saying, okay, I'm taking care of these kids. But we also heard very much the story of the of people and kind of like, okay, you know, what and this is really, I have to say, the one of the first times I've ever heard people say, okay, we really actually need to do something about this. Where it's multiple in the culture. You know, the New York Times put the headline, you know, put the picture, the names of the people that all died. And, you know, we have shootings every month, every week. They had the list of the 19 shootings that have happened and what everybody said about them. And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, we're actually and the word Barack Obama used was we have to change. Now, change, of course, all of us astrologers have been saying to everybody,
Uranus
is change, Pluto is evolution. We have to evolve and change. These two guys are fighting and saying, well, what is the story? Fighting is the wrong word. They're arguing in the sky because they're in fire and air, earth. And they're asking us to shift our vision, to shift our ideas about what's possible. So what that shooting did for many people was it shifted their vision of what's possible. It shifted their vision of what they want. It helped clarify. And a lot of times when we go through a finger of God, or we go through a crisis of faith, or we look at something and we go, oh my God, and we reflect on it brings us consciousness because we're reflecting on our own life and our own stuff and getting clear about what's really important, you know, as opposed to, you know, all the stuff about the fiscal cliff, it's gone, you know, because really what's important. And I do agree with you, Heather, your comment about because we are so sensitive as people right now because we've got so much turbulence going on in our lives that it really resonated very deeply in our being because as a culture each of us are experiencing major changes and we're trying to process how to work with those changes. What do we want in our life? And figures of God are moments of choice. I find very often when you look at them in a person's chart or when they get triggered if the person has them natally, they act kind of as giant compasses adjusting the direction of life. It's a giant mother cat coming down and picking you up by the back of your neck and saying, okay, we're adjusting direction now. We're changing. We're shape-shifting you. Get ready. And I think for many people, this was a shape-shifting week. And certainly the beginning of it, when we had the Hurricane Sandy, where we watched enormous devastation, it got people talking about global warming. And now we're talking about guns and mental illness, all of which need to be addressed as a culture.
All of which need to be addressed and aren't addressed until some emergency brings it close to home.
Yes.
And there's an interesting Jupiter-Pluto quincunx also this week.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the finger of God.
And that when it becomes exact, that aspect, it seems to ask us to look at what major obstacles we're sitting with, and that I agree with you that it's another example of how another part of the instruction package that finger of God is giving us. If we have to look at what obstructions we have. Now, we can see in politics, you're right, is it the fiscal cliff, it's the political machinations around the budget, it's, you know, people holding on to their identity as gunslingers, gun holders, and their refusal to make respectful room for treatment of mental illness.
Yeah.
So all of those blocks are being looked at carefully, and you know what would be fair and what would not be fair in this.
You know, and I think, you know, we had a fairly heated, I had a party on Saturday, and we had a fairly heated discussion in my house about, you know, the right to bear arms and militia, and it's like, I don't think anybody's saying, you know, you can't carry arms. I just think people are saying, and the premise of it is, you know, to be able to, you know, you can stand and fight for your government, or you can also, in the case of tyranny, you can argue with your government. But I think being able to take out 100 kids with, you know, to be, you know, the machine gun business. No, you don't need a friggin', and back when they had that,
no,
they didn't, it was one gun, one bullet at a time. You know, it was a musket, you know.
Right.
The vision of being able to shoot 100 bullets just didn't exist. Or they might have said, you know, you can have a revolver, but you can't have a Glock with multi cartridges.
My daughter pointed out that recently she adopted her stepdaughter, and she had to go through many months of psychological evaluation to do so.
Yeah.
Every counselor she'd ever spoken to had to be interviewed. But you need nothing to buy a gun.
No.
And that the process, you know, yes, the difference between having a gun and having an assault rifle, is questionable. And really, you know, now that we have a president who's not running for re-election, they have the power to bring up the tough questions that no American wants to do, that, you know, it divides America so intensely.
Right.
But we also this week have Venus squared Neptune over the weekend, and I think that left people in somewhat of a haze, and that part of that haze may have been in, you know, I know many people who just responded to that event by shutting down for the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Just calling into their beds and not leaving, yeah.
Right.
Which was a really good option, actually, if you could do it. Yeah.
But now Venus comes to trine Uranus this week, so it's a much more creative problem solving, you know, dive into the art, use the season for what it's good for, and that kind of lineup.
Yeah. And frisky, too. Venus trine Uranus is frisky. She
and
wants
frisky.
To play.
She
wants to play. She wants to have fun. The girls just want to have fun. It's the Cyndi Lauper song is the way I think of it.
Yeah, but even while she's trine Uranus, tomorrow and the next day, the moon will be in Pisces, so still people are still feeling, you know, they may be feeling flirtatious, but they're still feeling a little woofy and emotionally tender and sleepy. So that changes, I think, as the moon heads into Aries on the 20th.
And then Finger of God forms, right?
Right.
And then we have the solstice.
And then the solstice on Friday when the sun enters Capricorn and sextiles Neptune.
Yep. Now, Heather, do you use the solstice as the chart for the year, or do you use it as the chart for the season?
I just use it for a chart for the season.
For the season, yeah. Yeah, because some people like it as a chart for the year. They look at it as the annual chart, and other people are like, nope, it's a seasonal chart.
No, I use the spring one.
You use the spring one, yeah. I'm a winter girl, but that's, you know, everybody's a little different. But I do think it's a very powerful solstice chart. You want to talk about that, what we saw in it? Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you show them the solstice chart?
What the solstice chart is it's, we cast it for when the sun actually enters the seasonal ingress. So it's spring, summer, fall, winter. And the reason I like the winter one is it's the bottom of the chart. You know, it's down at the very bottom. Sun at Capricorn on the lower business and starts to grow. Heather likes Aries, which is the beginning of the growing season itself, which is the spring equinox. And
the great thing about a circle is that it has no beginning.
No beginning and no end. So we can both be right.
Anywhere you pick it up, it works.
Right, it works. So, you know, Heather does it for the season, so she'll be using this chart through spring. I'll be saying you got it for the whole year. And, you can pick. And when you get old enough to be an astrologer, these are one of the things the astrologers go, no, it should be that. No, it should be this. So the whole thing with the solstice chart, what you do is you look at it for, it's a very powerful chart this time. It has got the, it's got that finger of God that we were talking about in it that's very powerful, and it actually perfects the day before and the day after this, the 21st of December. And Sun and Juno are cast for Washington, D.C. at 6:12 in the morning. The Sun and Juno are joined. So it's going to be asking you who you want to partner with, who's your partner, who's your buddy, And then Saturn and Pluto are exactly sextile to each other, separated by minutes. And Saturn's in the house of hopes and dreams, coming back to the sun, saying, what is your hope and dream? And, of course, Pluto and Saturn can switch places because they're in each other's signs. And then the apex is sending off over to the over to Jupiter in the sixth. So it's about incremental changes to your daily life. You don't have to have the big plan, but you do have to have a short-term plan. You have to say, my short-term vision for right now is this. This is what I want. This is the vision I have. And then I'll get back to you and I'll revise it. But the other thing is all the planets are moving, with the exception of Jupiter, are moving forward now. So it's very much full steam ahead. And they're all moving forward until Saturn stations at the end of February. So this time is really ripe for planting lots and lots of seeds. Because the planets are busy bees, and they're all busy doing stuff, and they're all moving forward, and they're all talking to each other. So it's very big time for kind of getting stuff off the ground, at least initiating, starting, singing it in the right direction. And I look at it as, you know, the winter period is when the seeds are in the earth and they're planting their dream of what they're going to do when they wake up in the spring. So it's the incubation period for the dream, too. It's a very powerful chart. Moon's in Aries, making it a rock-kicking kind of wild chart. Uranus is angular on the fourth house cusp, so it's going to be very much a time of change, change, change. And with that Jupiter and Gemini in the sixth, able to swap places with the Mercury, you're able to say, this is what I want to do. These are the changes I want to make in my daily life. This is my vision of where I'm going. And then with Jupiter in the first, if it swaps with Mercury, goes to the first house, because that's what mutual reception planets do. They can swap back and forth. Jupiter in the first is all about abundance. When we have Jupiter go through the first, we get nice and fat, and we gain things, and we expand our life, and we get our... So this is really a visionary point, a visionary moment in time for each and every one of us. And we sat watching that hurricane blow people's lives away, and we sat watching all these people processing the loss of life that were just really beginning, that hadn't even had a chance to bloom yet. And it makes each of us think about how we've spent our lives. And I think this solstice period is going to be very powerful for us as people, as an individual, to sit and think, well, what's important to me? You know, I'm here in my life at this age, whatever age you are. I'm here at this point in my exploration, in my experiment, in my trying to create my dream. How happy am I? What do I need to change? What do I need to restructure Saturn? What do I need to evolve Pluto? What do I need to change and kick up and throw away and break through Uranus to Jupiter create the vision I have for myself? And I may not know 100% what that vision is yet, but I know it's got this component, and it gives us the ability to seed and to move towards it. I just think it's an amazingly powerful chart, all first quadrant, very focused, and it's just like, man, this energy is so ripe, and that moon in Aries is so like, let me go, I gotta go. So I'm like rocking, you know, I'm like, yeah, you know, it's finger of God, you know, so it's got a little bit of a kick to it. But it also is like, okay, you know, you said you wanted this, you got it. How do you see it?
I absolutely agree with you. I'm going to ask now, because we're running low on time, if we have anybody online.
Let me look.
If not, could you give out the line before we start talking?
Yep, our phone number is 347-215-8881. 347-215-8881. And when you call, press 1, so you raise your hand so we can see you, that you want to be called on. Yeah, the other thing I've noticed, Heather, is we don't have anybody raising their hand right now. We have a couple people out there, but if they press the 1 key and raise their hand, I'll call on them. The other thing I've noticed is everybody's very young right now. We're all between like 5 and 9 years old. Because the planets, the big planets, are 5 and 9. Or we're dealing with 5 and 9-year-olds. Like, you might be having a struggle with someone and they're 5 or 9, 5 to 9 years old. Because we're being challenged on a really fundamental level. And whenever that happens, we go back to those ages. And the planets are all stimulating that age. You know, Uranus and Venus, or Venus and Chiron, are 5 to 6. Jupiter and Neptune and Saturn are all 8. Uranus is 4.5.
It does seem to be bringing up some primordial healing.
Yeah.
And that also is set off by the fact that those kids, you know, I think everybody identified when with the kids who were exactly those ages.
Yeah.
The ages that both they were at that, when they were that age, and at who they were at that age, and with their own children at that age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about the season ahead, because we've got, you know, the, when the sun goes into Capricorn, we also head into a time of great, you know, we go back to our family roots and family traditions. That's one reason why we, you know, the, that the festive part of the season is, well, planets are in Sagittarius. When the sun goes into Capricorn, it's time to go home to the family and come or go home to roots, go home to your own traditions, whatever those traditions are. But people can feel a little stuck in the patterns. Luckily, as we start into the season with Mercury and Venus in Sagittarius and recent events which bring make our heart open and grateful, Venus is now moving into and will be for the next few days, an opposition to Jupiter. And an opposition to Jupiter isn't bad for Venus. It makes lots of feeling and can be lots of laughter. That if we can respond to this event with gratitude for life and gratitude for one another and not just sorrow and fixation. One thing about the Mercury-Uranus trine, it can be a very busy mind, but it can also be in a mind that just obsesses, you know, it's just an overactive mind. Let's obsess on something beautiful as well. I was, you know, the day, the event, I was going back and forth between the event and a report on Bhutan and their program for improving gross national happiness in Bhutan, in the Buddhist country. And it was real good to remember that that was as real and as beautiful and as, you know, active as involving many more people than what was going on in Connecticut. And that we need to keep the both and, you know, the shadow and the light, the both and right in there in our minds right now.
Right.
And that Mercury Uranus wants to explore and fixate, and it will be hungry for every little detail. But if it's hungry for every little detail, only of a tragedy, which, you know, Nuvis seems to be doing now, it loses the exploratory quality of the aspect that can help us find solutions instead of fixate on pain.
Mm-hmm. Rather than fixating on the problems, yeah.
Right. And on Christmas Day itself, Mars goes into Aquarius, and it's a good day. It will be helpful to Mars in Capricorn can be ruthlessly efficient, which can be good if you're Christmas shopping, but it can be difficult if you are, you know, facing great anger or great difficulty, because that Mars in Capricorn determination can go any way. But when it hits into Aquarius, we may see, you know, that it's easier to deal with group dynamics in the family or in your community. And I'm looking forward to that. And it will form a trine to Jupiter, which can be some sibling rivalry, but can also be very helpful.
Well, I think, yeah, the trine to Jupiter, I'm kind of thinking that should help be helpful, too, in terms of helping people
mm-hmm.
process a lot of the family feelings, because mm-hmm. everybody's going to be kind of in the mood to be kind to each other. Oops, we have a person raising their hand. Okay. I was
good.
Checking my hand raisings.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We got a caller. We got 6 minutes. Hi, 240. You're on the air. How can we help?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yes.
Okay, great. I am a sun sign Aquarius, a moon sign Aries, January 24th, 1988. I'm a sun sign, mm-hmm. Moon sign Aries, and I'm also a rising Libra. So I'm having a question about, oh, sorry. Do you need
what
to know
time
the location?
Were you born?
What,
I was born at
11:45
p.m.
Mm-hmm. And where?
And we're Rockville, Maryland.
Okay.
So I'm an air, fire, air combination.
Okay, so January 24th,
1988. I'm sorry.
88, okay.
Yeah.
Connections.
And what was your question?
My question is mostly about relationships, especially coming into the new year. I feel like my Aquarius side, I'm so much of an independent person. I do my own thing, typical Aquarius, mm-hmm. whatever. But at the same time, I feel like it's time for me to get a companion. It's time for me. But at the same time, I feel like...
It's not the Aquarius that really minds the companionship. It's the Moon and Aries conjunct Jupiter that's, kind of sort of freedom for die mentality. But I think what states it most clearly is your Venus-Mars square is exactly 11 degrees. That your Mars wants independence and freedom, and your Venus and Pisces wants romance and connection. And they go, no, independence, no, romance, no, independence, no, romance. And as long as they feel like you have to choose between the two of those, you won't get very far. But if you feel like you can
have both,
what would both look like?
And I feel
that
like
you can begin to let people a little closer.
I feel like that's my big problem, too, because it's like I feel this, oh, I need to be independent. I feel like I need to do my own thing. But then another side of me is like, you need to be taken care of. You need somebody who's going to take care of you, things like that. Also,
you're never going to let anybody take care of you. Just throw that one. That Venus and Pisces would like to be taken care of.
Right.
But you would never trust.
You would kick and scream and jump up and down if somebody was telling you had to be taking care of.
My ascension? Okay, my biggest thing with myself, I know I'm talking about me a lot. I know, like, my sun sign and my rising sign are both air signs. I have that Aquarius and that Libra going on, as well as my moon sign Aries. It's a combustible situation. So I feel like one side of me is I'm trying to be diplomatic. I'm trying to please everyone. But then the other side is like trying to go against what is supposed to happen. So if I'm trying to focus on a relationship in 2013,
well, if you can let,
what should I
understand? I have an Aries moon too, and I have a Mercury and Libra in the first house.
Yes.
So if what you can get, let the Libra be the diplomat and speak for the Aries, but the Aries has to stay in the driving seat. And the Aries can say, how can I diplomatically tell them, no, thank you, I'm going my own way?
Right.
Okay.
How can I kindly, happily, like, well, if they want to be upset, that's their problem. I'll be polite about it, but I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You're never going to do anything other than what you want to do. But you can do it kindly, friendly, not selfishly, and you can have friendships along the way.
Mm-hmm. And Heather's a great example of that. If you've noticed, she calls in from all over the world. She's always on the move, always running, but she's got a very long and successful relationship with her partner. Right, so she's kind of, a good example of that. You need the freedom and you need the relationship. And she kind of manages to blend them by saying, I need both. And, whether she's on the road, like right now she's in Santa Fe, but she'll be going home in the next couple of days. So it's understanding that both sides of that always need to be served as opposed to one or the other and either or, right? Sorry to use you as an example, Heather, but you kind of volunteered your chart there. I'm like, yeah, she's a really good example because she does it. She's a living example of working with that.
That doesn't mean it's not negotiation every day.
Every day, because it's part of the deal. But when she came east, when we all met her here, she was here working on her master's, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember her master's in theology.
My ordination, yeah.
And then now she's, out west, and she's back doing the astrology and the religion and the teaching and the moving, and she and her partner have roamed around the world. So it's kind of, it's good. It's understanding that balancing it is really the key. Yeah.
Right. And believing that it's possible. And that's where I think, I don't think you had a good example growing up that it was possible to both find your own way and, be in connection with it.
Right.
I agree.
Find your way
I also have my very good friend next to me who has a question as well. Can he go on as well?
Okay. No, because we're running out of time. We're in the 60 seconds, but he can call next week and we'll do it. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. I hit the button. I'm sorry I hit the hold button and hit you off. Bye. But, you can totally do the balancing. Hold that. Understand, you have to, when you have a dynamic like an opposition or a square, both planets need to be fed. It's not either or. It's feed them both a little bit each day, and then they're happy. Heather, you want anything you want to add in our 25 seconds left?
No, not to that. But we'll feel it this moon in Pisces. Next couple of days, it's emotional. And then when the moon goes into Aries on the 20th, we too may have to do just what she was saying, is trying to find a way to balance our needs from others.
Right.
In the meantime, have a good night, and feel free to check out our websites to get individual counseling. Otherwise, we're happy to speak to you next Monday night.
Yep, and I think, actually, are we on next Monday? We should probably to check if we're on.
Oh. Because
it's a holiday. We might be. We might not be. We'll let you know. But if we're here, if we're not here, happy holidays. And if we aren't here, if we're here, we'll be here. We'll send out a little note, and you'll find us. In the meantime, tune in and have a great holiday. Happy Christmas. So take care, Heather. Have a good one. Big hugs. All right. Bye.